In the tiniest event lies the wisdom of the entire universe, if you know how to plumb the depths of the moment. What does the lifting feel like? Is it heavy, or does the leg float up? When you're moving it forward, is it pushing, or is there an arc? When you're letting the foot down, is it dropping? Is it like liquid? Is it hot or is it cool? Does it all feel hard or does it feel soft? Tune into all the qualities of each step as well. Keep your awareness with each movement of the leg. Notice how the complicated mind rails against something this simple. Let the mind be simple. No need at this moment to think of anything but the next step. In the few remaining minutes of this exercise, make a renewed effort to keep your attention focused. If your mind wanders, don't get upset. That's just more wandering. Just notice it and once again bring it back. 1,000 times it will wander, and 1,001 times you will bring it back. 10,000 times it will wander, and 10,001 you will bring it back. Be gentle, but firm. Final minute now, just one more minute of attention to the foot. Now, in the way that you walk back to your place, do it consciously. Find your way back to your place if you have to rearrange your cushions, but do it all watching your movements. If you're reaching, notice reaching. If you're walking, notice walking. If you're looking around, notice looking around. Stay as conscious as you can through this process. Let this be part of the exercise. The game isn't to get back. The game is in the process of getting back. As you look around, notice looking. As you move, as you sit, notice sitting. Stay as fully aware of the whole movement process of your eyes, of your body, of your moving equipment, whatever it is.
A little more than 1 year ago, at a weekend similar to this, in Tampa, Florida, we were introducing this practice, and it was, like today, an extremely beautiful day outside, and we had open access from the room out to these beautiful fields. So instead of being confined to this room, or the room as we were today, we told folks if they wanted to, they could do the walking practice on their own outside. What we didn't know was just on the lawn outside the building we were in was a wedding about to begin. And right in the middle of the ceremony on this field came the Night of the Living Dead. 200 lift push placers descending on the whole thing. So now we don't take any chances anymore.
There's a great meditation center in Barre, Massachusetts called Insight Meditation Society where you can go and for 10 days just walk and sit and walk and sit. And it used to be that you could do the walking meditation out on the road, but all the farmers nearby requested they not do it because it was just too upsetting to their lifestyles to have these beings just walking this way. It's just...
The shotguns started coming out of the back of the pickups. So, along those lines, though, about being in this room, I just wanted to say, obviously, because of the conditions in here, we were all pretty much relegated to go at the same pace. And when you're doing this practice on your own, you obviously have the freedom. As you get quieter, you will naturally start to slow down, and it will get into the minutiae that Ram Dass was talking about of the lifting, intention to lift. And at other times when you're feeling more sluggish and heavy, you might want to intentionally quicken the pace just to refresh yourself a little bit. Because you can see when you try to force yourself to slow down too much, you start to quiver or maybe fall over or whatever. So please know that on your own, find your own pace.
Okay, now, with these two practices we've just done, which are both concentration exercises, which is one component of meditation, it's just one component of it, but this itself would be enough. If you said, I want to get enlightened and I want method, you got it. Those two things would do it. They'd take you all the way through. If you really just kept using it to bring the mind to a quieter and quieter point where it stayed more concentrated. And you go through stages in this, and these stages are all incredibly articulated in hundreds of pages of text Theravadan Buddhist, in the Pali doctrine, in the Tripitaka, which is a huge, big set of information. It'll describe how you'll go through stages where the mind, you'll bring it to the foot, and then it'll immediately go back to something else because you'll be thinking about something else. Like, I remember when I first started to do this practice, I was sitting for a 10-day course, and you sit and you, everybody's sitting in a room, 100 people are sitting in the room, and the meditation master is saying, keep your awareness with your breath. And I remember starting to have a sexual fantasy. And I thought, no, I should follow my breath. And I heard him say, bring your awareness back to your breath. And I, but my mind kept going back because it was a very good fantasy. And I, and finally, I just said, the hell with it. And I just sat there looking holy, like I was following my breath. But I just had hours of this sexual fantasy. And everybody thought I was quite a meditator because I could sit so quietly. And but what happens is at first the mind will keep going off towards something else. And then if you keep just bringing the mind back and bringing it back, after a while, it's like taming a wild thing. It gets so that it will finally settle on the point. And then you enter into what's often called neighborhood concentration, where the mind is just resting like on the breath or the foot, as if it's that's the cave it's come home into. And every time the mind then goes away from it, it immediately goes back all by itself, and it just keeps going in. And then that's the beginning of a whole new phase of going inward and inward. And it's an unfolding day by day by day. I'm telling you, I to do 2 months of this, and the interesting thing about the 2 months is that you think, because since you're just sitting and walking and you see the teacher for 5 minutes a day, and he's studying, he's like a computer program that's assessing what your mind is doing. That's what he's hearing. So you go in and you make a report and you say, I was meditating last evening. You tell him anything unusual that happened. And I became aware, I was following my rising and falling of my breath, and I became aware of a bird singing. I mean, that's a big deal when you're sitting in a room all day long, you know. And I noted it as listening, see, because then your awareness went to your ear listening, so you're noticing listening. And then he says, did you become aware of the bird on a rising breath or a falling breath? You see, I didn't notice. And then as I got up to leave, he said, tell me, did you awaken this morning on a rising breath or a falling breath? I didn't notice. Would you please be a little more precise? Okay. And then he excuses you. I mean, and there are stages where you think, I got a PhD, and I'm coming here across the world to sit in this room, you know, eating this food that I can't stand, all alone, for months, just going up and down and sitting and following my breath. And you go through the whole thing of psychosis, and this is a conspiracy. I mean, all of your neurosis and madness comes to the surface, and it's like skimming soup. It's like chicken soup. It keeps rising, and you skim it, and it rises, and you skim it, and you rise, and you skim it. And that's what happens. The minute you try to focus the breath, stuff rises. All the stuff will keep coming up. And each thought will say, psst, think me. I'm real. You really should be thinking about me now. I mean, you're in there 1 week, and you're thinking, now, when I leave here, what am I going to do next? It's 2 months away. I got to think about it now. You know? I wonder what they're going to have for lunch. Should I wash my clothes tomorrow morning, or should I? Are those pants too dirty? I mean, you could spend a whole half hour thinking about that one. No?
I've spent days on my clothes.
Questions about these two practices? Yes.
I seem to be able to focus my awareness, but I can't get the body stuff makes me nuts, you know.
She said when she's sitting, she goes to focus on the breath, and then she's got a backache and a neck ache, and she tries to notice it and then go back to her breath, and she can't do it. It just keeps preoccupying you. What you do under those conditions, what you were doing was you were making, originally, your instruction was, make the breath your primary object of meditation. In the case where you have a pain, your awareness goes and you notice pain, and then you try to go back to your breath, but the pain doesn't disappear. If your concentration was strong enough, it would. But if it isn't, the pain's still there. When the pain continues, you turn and you make the pain your primary object of meditation. So you're sitting here, focus now on the pain in your neck. Don't let your mind wander from the pain in your neck. See? Don't go back to breath, stay with the pain in the neck, see? Is it hard or soft? Is it round or square? Is it moving or is it solid? See? And you start to focus and use that, because it doesn't matter which thing you use. We're just taking the breath because everybody's got one. You know, it's an easy one to work with, but it doesn't matter. If something else pulls you in your body, go to it and work with it.
Isn't there a point where it goes away, where you meditate beyond that, or I just keep getting excited?
After a while, when you get into it for a while, it'll start to dissolve and disappear, then go back to your breath.
If you could imagine water on rock, it doesn't wear away the rock instantaneously. Over time, and over time of the practice, the rock begins to soften. And so on. And so there's a great sort of Western achievement model about meditating. You know, God, if I put in a week, I should be able to meditate. That's just another opportunity to soften, to come back to the practice, to soften, to see how your own mind reacts about your own mind. And just relax.
Yeah, because your judgment about yourself is now added on, getting in the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yes.
What about sleepiness?
Sleepiness is two things. One, it's sleepiness, and one, it's resistance. And the best thing is to take intentional breaths every time you get sleepy, focusing on the breath, but intentional breaths, which will bring you more oxygen into your system, and then start again, and then you'll start to go to sleep, and then take some intentional breaths, and just, if your commitment is to following the breath, sooner or later, every neurotic pattern will give up. But some of them are really good, and they'll be really creative, and you'll say, no, I'm really sleepy. I should have gotten more sleep last night. I better not do this exercise now.
If I just nap for an hour, I'll be able to meditate later.
And the wonderful thing about 2 months alone in a room is you say, all right, I'll nap. Then you nap, and then you wake up and you can't sleep anymore, and here you still are, and you still got a month and 3/4 left to go, you know? It's far out. I mean, you've run through everything you can possibly hide in, and there's nowhere else to hide, you know? Questions?
Well, I was just following up a little bit more on the question of tending to nodding off and sleeping. What if you're following your breath very closely and all of a sudden you just find yourself gone?
Waking up.
Gone? What?
And then when the bell rings, oh yeah, I was gone. I was out.
Yeah. We often just, you mean gone to sleep? Because there are different gone, but you can go different places. I assume gone.
Where I go, I'm gone.
Where you go. Maybe you go into full enlightenment. Actually, when you go to sleep, when you wake up, just sit back up and start the thing again. I mean, that's all you do. You just keep... See, the only thing you've made is a commitment that for this 40 minutes or this hour, I will do what I can to keep concentrated on this primary object. That's all. If you fall asleep, you couldn't help it. If you can catch yourself as you're falling asleep and take some breaths and bring yourself back, then you can go back on. Otherwise, you fall out and you'll have to wait for the next meditation. And then try again. Goes on and on. You know, I mean, I've got 20 years of this now.
I tend to be controlling my breath throughout rather than just allowing myself to breathe.
There's a tendency, once you focus on your breath, that many of you notice that what was usually a perfectly involuntary, natural thing suddenly becomes voluntary, and you can't decide whether you're supposed to breathe in or breathe out, or how deep to make the breath, or how fast, and it gets faster. You'll notice that. Just notice it, and keep letting it happen, and it'll just keep playing around until after a while it'll go back to its... The statement is breathe naturally. But you can't sometimes, And then you notice the way the mind plays. And then, because the breath is right in between voluntary and involuntary. Unlike the heartbeat, which is a little harder to bring under voluntary control, the breath's really easy. So it's an interesting, delicate doorway. Yeah.
Sometimes I can meditate by focusing on something, some thought that I want to focus on. Sometimes I can meditate by basically not focusing on anything at all, by totally clearing away all thoughts and all point of attention. Can you comment on that?
The focusing, not focusing on anything, that's a whole other meditation. We're going to be talking about it. I want to hold it if you don't mind. You can focus. We're talking now about picking some primary object and concentrating. This other one is going into spacious awareness, which is a whole other realm, which we'll do in another meditation. Okay? So if you don't mind holding the question a little while. These are just, if you could look at, There are all these different aspects of meditation, but one of them is concentration, and one of them is what is often called mindfulness, which is just being aware of phenomena as they come up and disappear. And then there are other meditations in which you go into the ground rather than to the figure. You just go into the spaciousness in which everything exists, and you don't even notice the stuff anymore. Those are all different strategies of meditation in different lineages. Yes?
If thoughts intrude more with one type, say the sitting, than with the walking, would you stick with one where thoughts intrude more as a more opportunity for growth, or would you go with the other one?
I would say at the initial stage, find the one that allows you to go the deepest into the concentration. And then as your concentration gets deeper, you can start to use other methods where it's harder because the mind keeps going off more. But for a lot of people, for example, can't do sitting meditation. And they do wonderfully with Tai Chi, for example, in which there is an awareness of the mind in all these different states. It's a moving meditation, walking meditation, but not sitting. There are a lot of different things, and you've got to find what is useful for you at a moment. A lot of people will start with moving meditation, and then as their concentration increases, then they'll settle down and be able to do sitting meditation. Other people, when they sit, they immediately go to sleep.
Is there a suggested practice time?
Is there a suggested practice time? The time... When you're beginning, I would say the minimum you should do is about 20 minutes at any one time. Ideally, it would be better to do 40 minutes, but 20 minutes at least is a beginning. Less than that, it's probably a little too, you don't settle in deeply enough. It would be good, if you're going to do practices like this, to then allow yourself a longer period now and then for a more continuous practice. Like take a day or a weekend. Sometimes people that are doing this practice get together in somebody's house for a day. And they take turns ringing the bell. And they just have 40 minutes sitting, 40 minutes walking, 40 minutes sitting, then they have lunch, then 40 minutes sitting, 40 minutes walking. And they just do this all day, just silently in the house or on the grounds. And just doing one day of it will deepen it immeasurably, and it'll break you through habits you develop. Because just 20 minutes at a time, you'll develop bad habits after a while. You'll go into it planning your day, and by the time you've settled, you're already time to get up, and you're already anticipating, and you're just going through the routine of sitting there and nothing's really happening. A lot of people that have done TM know how mechanical it can get, and you're not doing anything, really. So you've got to watch yourself to see when it's straight, when you can get in deep enough, all right?
Meditate for very short periods of time productively, talking 1 or 2 minutes, even less, even 30 seconds or 10 seconds, or just the distance it takes to go between fourth floor to fifth floor in an elevator. Can you comment on that?
Ultimately, once you have a meditative practice going, then you start to cultivate what is called meditation in action. So that you're as many times as you can, you're bringing your awareness back to be aware of the predicament you're in. So you're constantly doing it all the time. And so after a while, you're not very much out of meditation. You're in it. It's not like you're sitting like this all day long. You're just doing what you do all day. But when you meet somebody that's in it, you can feel that there's another level behind the form that you're meeting them in, behind it. That's called meditation in action. And sure, the more you can do of it, the better. I mean, I do a lot of things like this in... See, it depends on which technique you're using, because the concentration one is a little harder to use when you've got social or mechanical things that are required of you. There are other kinds of meditation for that. I mean, it's really hard to follow your breath with full concentration when you're driving a car, for example, because a certain amount of awareness has to be into the driving of the car, right? But you can bring your awareness to the driving of the car as your primary object. See, that's the way you would do that, okay? Sir?
I did a Vipassana retreat with Goenka.
Yes.
And I found the technique to be real powerful.
He said that he studied with a teacher, Sri Goenka, who taught this technique. He taught it at the tip of the nose, actually. And then he cautioned the students not to use any other technique. This was the only technique. Right. I'll tell you, it's gotten so precious that there are two, for example, there are two schools in Burma. There are the abdomen school and the tip of the nose school. And they don't even talk to each other. And both of them assume that they have perverted the words of the Buddha, okay, because they're all such purists. I am a completely schlock schlepper. I mean, you know, and Sri Goenka would have very little to do with me because I take many different trainings, and I think now he wouldn't even let me back into a scene, actually, because I've taken his training extensively and spent a lot of time at Dhammagiri and all that. But then I've gone off in other techniques. And the minute you take another technique, Goenka says no. And I can understand what he's saying, because under certain conditions, when you do a practice, to get in deep enough into that practice, you just can't keep going doing a lot of different things. But that has to happen from an intuitive sense of that's what I should do at this point. It isn't happening because somebody says, don't try that, don't try that. I say, try anything you want to try, and then as you go on, you're going to find some methods that work for you so well, you're going to want to go deeper and deeper and deeper into that method, and then trust your own heart and go deeper, right? And then when you come out the other side, you'll find that all the methods do the same thing for you. See, so it's like a funnel going in and then a thing coming out, okay? I did a little bit earlier today, the fact that all spiritual practices are traps. For this to work, you have to become really a meditator. But as I said this morning, you don't want to end up being a meditator, you want to end up being free. And there are a lot of these kind of dry, crusty meditators around. They've been meditating for thousands of years, and you meet them, and they're just, they like, how many hours do you meditate? You know, and it's in the way they got so caught in the method itself, because the method, the predicament is that a method, if it works, brings you into a certain state. At the early stage, you identify the state with the method you use to get there. As you go on, you see that the state is the state, and the method is the method. And, like, you may use sex to get into an orgasmic, transcendent, merging state. So then you become obsessed with sex. You may use meditation to do that. Then you become obsessed with meditation. The state you got into is the state you got into. It's a transcendent, ecstatic, merging state. It's different than the method you use to get there. But most people identify the method with the state that they arrive at through the method. Is that coming through? All right. Okay, a few more questions? And yeah.
Could you comment on open-eyed meditation, perhaps focusing on a candle?
Hold on. We're going to do it tomorrow. We're going to do it in the next day, okay? Would you wait on that question? Yeah.
anything magic about sitting to meditate as opposed to laying down?
Is there anything magic about sitting to meditate as opposed to lying down? No, except you go to sleep more easily when you're lying down. But if you can lie down and meditate, of course, it's fine.
I notice myself rebelling against the orders, but my mind thinks it's the authority figure telling me what to do, and then I rebel against it, and I think, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to think whatever I want to think.
No, she's talking about her rebellion against instructions and teachers and stuff who know and tell you what to do. It's very interesting. Just watch your own, you're watching yourself do it. See, that's it. Watch yourself be rebel. I mean, you hired me to teach you this. Then you can tell me, you know, you can spend your time rebelling against me, but you can see how you're doing something to yourself by doing that. So the best thing to do is just watch it. Just keep watching it. Witness it.
Usually I'm a real calm person and don't have trouble going into a meditative state. But sometimes I'll come home from work and be so stressed out.
She says sometimes she comes home from work and she's so stressed out she just can't calm down in order to meditate. Yeah, I've been in those states many times. I often have to take a walk first before I can do something, or take a bath, or, you know, I mean, it's just not the moment to do it. I don't fight against myself. I used to fight against myself to be holy. You know, I meditate at 5. So I'm going to meditate. Now I think, no, this isn't the time. It doesn't feel right. Now, don't let this get completely out of control. That doesn't mean, well, I haven't meditated in 8 weeks, but, you know, I just haven't felt up to it. At the beginning, it's really useful to have a structure, but also to have a little wisdom as to when to give way a little bit in it. I'll tell you, if you, in terms of meditative, just short-term practices to build into your daily life, if you have a practice where you sit down and you bring your awareness to some focal point for a little while, a concentration point, and then you get quiet enough, and then that's a good time to do one of two things. You could read a quote from something, and we'll be doing some of that tomorrow, reading some quotes and meditating on them. You can just have little things around you, like the little booklet we handed out with things, and you just read a little shloka or a little phrase, and you just sit with it for a little while. It's nice because your mind is quiet and clear. Another thing to do is if you do this, if you meditate at night, bring your mind to one point, then quiet down, then sit, and then review the day, the events of the day, and see where you got stuck the most, how you got stuck the most. Okay? And then the next day, do the same thing, and then in the evening, review where you got stuck the most. And after a while, you'll begin to... During the day, as you start to get stuck, you'll say, I'm getting stuck, instead of just going into it, that those evening things start to affect the way that the subsequent day's reactions occur. Any more? Yeah?
What do you mean by stuck?
Stuck means you get caught in the drama of one dimension of reality, and you lose your perspective. Okay. Yes?
What happens when you're meditating like over a month or two?
What happens is that when you meditate over long times, that your mind gets very, very, very quiet until you're seeing, like, instead of the rising of the breath, it's like you've got 10,000 ants in a line and they're all walking. I mean, you get it down into molecular stuff and it starts to fill the space and you start to go into rapture and bliss and then into domains of emptiness with it all. I mean, it's just keeps unfolding and unfolding and unfolding. And then in terms of that, then finally the mind gets so one-pointed, you begin to see your own thought forms arising and existing and passing away. You see the awareness noticing the foot lifting, and then that thought coming, existing, and passing away. And these are coming at a, as the Buddha said, about a trillionth at a blink of an eye. And you're getting to the point where you're seeing each one discreetly. Your awareness is pulling back from time. I mean, this is really exquisite stuff, but it's very far out. And if you wanted to go the whole ball of whatever it's called, ball of yarn, ball of wax, wax. What happens finally is that you see the space between each one of these thoughts that comes in and disappears, and then there's a space, and ultimately your awareness goes into the space between two of them. That's one trillionth per blink of an eye, and that's called nirvana.
Okay. There's a lovely quote by Tilopa. At first, a yogi feels his mind is tumbling like a waterfall. In mid-course, like the Ganges, it flows on slow and gentle. In the end, it is a great, vast ocean where the lights of sun and mother merge in one.
You have a... Yeah. A question for tomorrow's questioning, not today. Okay, that's too complex a question for now.
This concludes Tape 3 of Spiritual Perspectives and Practices for Daily Life with Ram Dass. Our program continues with Tape 4.